reviews of budgets, I want to make just a short announcement before we get started, and that is to legislators, those who are here, please try to refrain from remarks other than questions about the specifics of the budgets. No pontificating or speeches. We'll have plenty of time to make those later. We'll begin with the Department of Revenue. Commissioner Rexlinger.
And we're not being paid overtime.
Jerry, that means you.
That way we can get out of here maybe a little bit.
We'll have more time to play baseball.
Somehow I don't think so.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. I'm Darrell Rexmichael, Commissioner, Department of Revenue. Commissioner designee.
Still.
Good. Get that settled. Yeah, thanks for having us here tonight. And I know we were asked to take a look at our general fund component, and we've also looked at our other fund components, but we're really here tonight to talk about the general fund component. And we have two handouts that we have provided for you. And the first one I'd like to refer to is one that's headed up State of Alaska Department of Revenue General Fund Budgeted Expenditures Revenue Source. Our total general fund budget, at least the revenue source there, is $13,850,000. And as you're probably aware, we've been asked to look at a $2.5 million reduction scenario off of that, which is approximately 18.5%. And of that $13,850,000, you can see child support is listed down there, and that's says matching receipts, but it's really general fund money that is eligible for federal fund match. And we do, in fact, get another over $7 million on top of the money you see there. So the child support expenditures are a lot higher than that. And then income and excise audit, most of that is just regular general fund. We do have some program receipts, and that's the unclaimed property section. That's the function we do. It's return. It's a new program, relatively new. It started a few years back, and this past year returned over $700 million to the state of Alaska. Then there's oil and gas audit function, and that's entirely what we might call general fund money. And then there's treasury management. We have $1,383,000. Treasury has a lot more funds that it expends, but those funds are all other funds. A lot of it's in the pension trust funds and some other funds. There's the commissioner's office, $711,000. The oil and gas tax case reviews, $375,000. Administrative services, $1,001,000. Alcoholic beverage control, and that's program receipts of $774.8 million. And then the mental health is in there, $501 million. I just might like to point out a couple things, like with program receipts. You know, sometimes I'm really not sure why we call some things program receipts, because I think we could look at a lot of things that Treasury does and call it all program receipts. But we just have a couple of them there designated as program receipts. And I mentioned Treasury has some significant other funds. Those other funds, I think the budget on that is about $15.3 million, and so it is a substantial amount of other funds that we have there to expend. Then the next handout we have here is the Alaska Department of Revenue House Finance Budget Presentation. I might indicate before we get started on this, Mr. Chairman, is that we've looked at our budget real close. We have last year and this year, and we believe that we've kind of extracted about as many operating efficiencies as we can hope to get. Obviously, I don't think anything's always 100% efficient. We could probably still fine-tune a little bit more, and we continue to look for those opportunities. However, the budget that we did present, we believe very strongly in. We think that is a very reasonable and realistic budget. On the other hand, I do know that we have revenue shortfalls, probably know it as well as anybody in the state, and you folks have certainly become aware of it, too. So we've come up with this reduction scenario. I'll just start on down the list. We're not proposing. I mean, we propose these, you know, but you know, our degree of comfort with them varies by the item that presented. And as we go down through here, we can see that some have some serious negative impacts. I believe actually all of them have some serious negative impacts. The first one is alcoholic beverage control. That is part of our general fund budget. We saw before that was program receipts. We do have six investigator positions amounting to $347,000. Those positions could be eliminated. We think we could probably do it by policy. And if we'd eliminate it, the investigative functions could probably be performed by other law enforcement type officers when they were on premises for maybe other calls. whether it be where the troopers patrol or whether it's local police or maybe where there's village safety officers in those areas that still have on-site premises. The next area is in child support enforcement. It's really hard there to find any one area. We have a real long laundry list of some items that would include consolidating offices. We have a couple of people in Fairbanks and one in Juneau, and the rest are in Anchorage, and it would include putting them all in Anchorage and a lot of other operating cost reductions. It would reduce the general fund. All this list here would reduce general fund by $372,000. But if we did that, we would also reduce federal funded expenditures by $727,000. Might remind you that in the child support enforcement area, the general rule of thumb is that the federal government shares in about two-thirds of our cost. Some areas it's 90%. So whatever dollar we take out, we're taking out a substantial amount of federal dollars also. And if we did this, it may result in some other federal revenue reductions, and it may mean that we do not meet the federal mandates. And if we're in non-compliance, we could face some additional penalties by the federal government. Some states have. They've been sent bills, and they've been asked to pay money back to the federal government for non-compliance. The other area we looked at is maybe having a transaction fee. We looked at $25 per check. That's our understanding of what it costs in the state to write a warrant and process it is $25. That would result in revenues of $2,700,000. Now, we're still researching that. We think the federal government, if we were to do that, they would like to participate, if you will, in those receipts. And so what we would receive out of that may be something well less than $2,700,000, but we don't have the answer to that yet. We're still looking at it.
But, Commissioner, what's that for?
Well, if we just charge a $25 transaction fee, we have about 9,000 checks that we send out every month. And if we charge $25 per check, service charge for issuing these warrants, some of these functions we do because we're obligated, and some we do because people come to us to ask us to act as their banker and their accountant in the matter of child support. Some is voluntary and some is compliance, but we have to accept them all. But this would just be a flat charge of $25. Everybody that for every check that we process, we just bill it to the obligor.
Representative Boyer.
Why do you think you might lose federal incentive? Your FY93 agency request shows federal incentives the same as 92 when you and it's the general fund match is $280,000 less for 92 than those 93. So your reduction is only puts you a little under 92. Why do you think you'll lose incentive money? I mean, you didn't budget additional incentive money.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, we're talking about that $2.7 million, and our first look at it is if we're allowed to charge a setup fee.
No, I meant the 727 that you...
Oh, the 727?
Right.
Well, we generally get federal dollars for every state dollar that's spent.
I understand that.
And so this would be an associated federal dollar with the $372,000 of state dollars. Now, I didn't... You know, child support enforcement people worked up these numbers, and some areas are subject to about a two-thirds federal match, and some are 90%.
Right. I just think that the characterization of incentive revenue reductions is not accurate, or if it is, someone should speak to that, but it doesn't look like, because you haven't budgeted more incentive dollars, but if Rod or someone knows more precisely.
Well, is what could happen, as I understand, Representative, is that on the federal incentives, it depends on the categories of the expenditures and what have you as to what monies we get, and the better we do in our job, the greater the incentives are. And so some of these areas, we get penalized for not doing as good a job as what we might be able to do. And so it's sort of a moving target as to what the actual number is. Anyway, there is a downside to this. In Income and Excise Audit Division, we do have that unclaimed property tax program. We have three positions in the FY93 budget. We believe we could privatize that. If we did, though, we'd have to pay for somebody to perform that function. We don't know whether it'd be the same amount, but it would be a reduction of general fund expenditures. But on the other hand, we'd lose revenue because we would just net it from receipts. So in total, there's not a real savings, but there is a general fund reduction. We can eliminate the tax return compliance review function. There's 16 people in that function. We would save about $772,000. Our statistics indicate that those 16 people bring in additional revenue over and above what the taxpayers have showed in their returns of about $3,500,000. We think that loss would accelerate in the future as taxpayers came to understand that we were no longer doing desk-type audits. I might add that we don't audit every return that comes in. We don't do a desk audit of every return that comes in. Some come in from nonprofits, some come in from partnerships and other areas where there's no possibility of income to the state of Alaska. We do not have a personal income tax return. So unless there's a corporate partner, we don't look at a lot of the returns. In fact, we only desk audit about 20 to 25% of the total returns that are filed. And when it comes to field audits, we're down to about 1% of the returns that are filed. We have about 20,000 returns that are filed annually. But we could eliminate the compliance review function. But it would have significant downside.
And with that 772.3, would that be all 16 positions?
That would be all 16. We believe that in this function here, Mr. Chairman, that every one of these 16 people recover more, every one of them, recover more than what their cost is. I mean, obviously there is a rate of diminishing return, and we could have 30 people doing the job, and, you know, maybe that 30th person would be a negative net gain to the state, and maybe it's at the 20th. We believe, though, that the 16 are certainly bringing, every one of them are bringing in more revenue than what they cost.
Mr. Chairman? Maybe this question is premature. Maybe it should come at the end of the presentation, but I noticed the operating cost savings were almost $3 million, $2.98, where the target reduction was $2.5. So I guess somewhere either here or with our subcommittee, we'll discuss then that extra $482,000 that you've gone beyond below the target, where we might be able to put some of those dollars back then. And the two main areas that it looks like to me is in the compliance review here, and then also on the next one where we eliminate one audit team. Seems ridiculous to lose $40 million to save $272,000. So those are things that we might be able to discuss later.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Larson, we did not try to come right down to the $2.5 million number. We wanted to come up with as many ideas as what we could, but wherever we moved, especially because of two significant general fund items here, our income and excise and oil and gas audit. I mean, we've got to take in returns, we have to process them, and we have to do a lot of, you know, the collection function and everything else that goes into that. The only thing that we're down to now is in the compliance type reviews and the audit functions. And those are the items that we can do or not do, you know, by policy. But, you know, as you can see, it doesn't make a lot of sense not to do it because we're losing a lot of revenue by not doing it. But on the other hand, when you have a $13.8 million budget and you're looking at $2.5 million in target reductions, we need to come up with some areas for reduction. The other is in the fish tax. Pardon me?
Representative Brown.
Thank you. On that line, I wanted to ask how close you think we are to maximizing the dollars owed to the state in our income and excise audit. You show here if we cut these people, we would lose this amount, and it follows, I believe, if we added some more people, the revenues that could be generated would be at least enough to pay for those people and generate more money for the general fund. And since we are worried about not only the expenditure side but the revenue side, have you looked closely at what revenue-generating potential may be present either in this area or in the petroleum audit area?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Brown, we are looking at this. You know, unfortunately, some of the statistics that we have to work with don't offer us a lot. We're developing a lot more of those statistics, and we're looking at, you know, what additional revenues we might be able to obtain had we more people. Larry Myers, who's the director of Income and Excise Audit, we've been doing some reorganizations in that area. We've consolidated the audit function into two locations. We've reduced one old collector position that was really associated with the old personal income tax, and we've eliminated a couple of line supervisors with some of the reorganizations and consolidations we've done. And he believes that for right now, the 16 in the compliance review area is an adequate number. Yes, he'd probably think that perhaps a couple more people would still be paying for themselves, but we're looking at that. We don't want to request it this year, but we will be looking at that in the coming year and see where we are in FY94.
Thank you.
And the same would go in the Oil and Gas Audit Division. When we get down there, I'll explain a little bit more about Oil and Gas Audit Division as to where we think we are with that and where we might be going. The fish tax audit expense under income and excise audit, we're showing a revenue gain there of $246,000, and that would result from establishing a collection fee of 2%. It would require a statutory change in that area. And in the fish tax area, of course, there is a significant sharing with local communities. The state pays for 100% of the cost, and then the revenues are shared without regard to that cost. We think it's probably reasonable to ask that the communities share in some of that cost. In fact, the number there could be flexible. Maybe it's not 2%, and maybe we base it more on what level of audit compliance the local community might like to see in that area over and above what we're doing now, and ask them to pay for that extra audit level.
Representative Matthews. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on that, what you're suggesting is that if we have a user fee type of a 2% user fee for the municipalities on whom behalf you collect these taxes for, that we can recover this kind of revenue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mackey, it's really it's to cover our cost. We have auditors and things like that go out and do a significant amount of fish tax audit, and we would take that cost, at least the portion that's related to the amount that's shared to the local government, and reduce their sharing amount by our cost. And we've estimated that cost to be 2%. So is what it would mean, instead of the local governments, let's say, getting $13.5 million in fish tax, they'd get $13.5 million minus $246,000.
Just one follow-up on, as far as the statutory change, there's one bill I know in House Rules, the Senate bill, that deals with the fish, changing some of the formulas in the fish tax to allow to collect for in areas that they're not being processed locally. Perhaps you could take a look at that legislation and see if that might be a vehicle
to add
you know,
this
that
to.
That we might be able to put something in, or you know, I mean, that's ready to go on the floor. Right. So, I mean, I just wanted to point that out. Then, you know, a user fee certainly is a good idea, I think.
Mm-hmm. And we think, you know, even if somebody wanted to, they could even be tailored to the local community's desires as far as how much audit level they would like to see. The next area is Oil and Gas Audit Division. We have a property tax function that we perform. We think that we can eliminate four positions there and basically privatize out some of the assessment function to make sure that that gets done, because we know that that's where the majority of the revenues go. The companies, they file property tax returns, kind of like anybody else would, and then it's a matter of taking those returns and sending assessment notices. But that's a very concentrated level of effort that takes place during a couple of months, and we'd leave one person in that function to manage it and make sure it got done, and have on a contractual basis help in performing that assessment function. And then just a little bit of the audit function could be done when some of the other audit teams are out in the field examining the taxpayers' books and records for the income tax. So we believe that would result in a net saving of $200,000.
Mr. Chairman, just a question on that. That's basically to discontinue the audits that are done for the North Slope Borough and the City of Valdez in regards to the terminal and the pipeline?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Larson, the two affected communities, of course, a substantial affected community would be the North Slope Borough, and the other one would be in Kenai.
I see.
But we don't know if the effect would be that great, because we would continue to do the assessment function, but we wouldn't do it in-house except for one person to manage it, and we'd contract out the necessary help for that couple of months. And then later on, when the regular income and excise auditors or the oil and gas auditors are in the field, they could take a look at the property records while they're in the field.
How is this done now? Are the municipalities, whether it be Kenai or the North Slope Borough, they have their auditors do it, and then we have the state auditors audit what they have done? Or
Mr. Chairman and Representative Larson, no, the state does this on the oil and gas property.
I see.
The state does the audit function. We do lean on, well, we shouldn't say lean, we do ask North Slope Borough to participate a little bit. They do pay for some of our travel. If there's some area that they would like us to pay some particular attention to that requires travel, they have paid for some of our tickets. We believe there are provisions in statute, unlike in the fish tax area, we believe in this area there are provisions in statute that would allow us for them to share in the cost of it.
I guess my question would be then, if the state was to discontinue doing it instead of privatization, could not the municipalities do it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the statute requires that we assess. It says the state shall assess and may audit. So I think it's at least the way the statute's read right now, it is a state function. Not that the statutes couldn't be changed, but it is a tax sharing program too, and I think that's why the state does it, and then the tax is shared with those with the local governments. And
that's connected with the 10 mil or the 20 mil limit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's right.
I think if I was from the North Slope borough, I would be pretty close to doing my own assessment and auditing on that.
Well, maybe, you know, we could always share this thing in reverse. We could ask them to share back to the state and just let them maybe do it and have some kind of oversight.
I'm just thinking it would be well worth my backside to protect it in regards to that.
Mm-hmm. The next area there is we could downsize the economic research function. We show six positions. We actually have nine positions. One of them is vacant, and we can't fill it due to vacancy factor. So we really have a total of eight positions, and we had proposed eliminating five positions and leaving three there. It would certainly result in reduced quality of the forecast. We wouldn't be able to devote the time and attention that we do to it. We would probably have to use production forecast numbers, let's say from the Department of Natural Resources, and just take them like they are, and try to get some oil price projections from other sources and do the Alaska North Slope price conversion, maybe off of West Texas Intermediate scenario. But we think we could do it.
Mr. Jim, maybe we could keep the three of the nine who project the prices to be the highest and let the others be a fair way of doing it, I guess.
You know, Mr. Chairman, on that note, I was just reading an article today by this industry, not an industry, but this organization that looks at that, and they kind of talk about the West Texas intermediate price threshold of around $18, which translates into like $15.50 ANS, and people kind of look at that as the benchmark, and how there could be a significant fall below that scenario yet here in the coming months as people look to the summer driving season and what happens in the spring. So we don't know. I mean, you know, some people look and see, well, prices could further collapse from where they are right now, and others say, well, maybe the federal government even move in to step up some purchases for the petroleum reserve account. So it's, who knows? I mean, but revenues are unpredictable.
But it's important to us that we have a best protection we can.
Yeah, certainly correct, Mr. Chairman. It is important. And sometimes, like in any other function, you know, it depends on how finite we want to get. Do we want to get things down to the last dollar, or, you know, would it be good enough just to get it down to the last $1,000? And that's kind of the call that has to be made. I mean, information is as good as you can put together, but there has to be some economic limit to it, just like in the compliance review and income and excise audit division. We could have 50 people doing that job. But would they bring in enough revenue to justify themselves? Well, we don't think so, but could 20? Well, maybe 20 could, but we will be looking at that. Mm-hmm. Under oil and gas audit division, you know, this is one function that does bring in a lot of revenue, and we've reorganized that area. We have a few audit teams under one supervisor, and just to take out one of the four audit teams would result in a reduction in cost of $272,000, and a revenue loss of about $40 million. This oil and gas audit division, as you're probably mostly aware, there's a substantial backlog in uncollected taxes going way back, and our prime mission in life right now is to try to clear out those old taxes. The new amounts, the taxpayers are paying pretty close to what we think they probably will eventually owe. You know, we have that compound interest that's based off prime plus, and taxpayers are paying, but it's the old cases. So we think as we move on down and get some of these settled out or through litigation or formal hearing or whatever it takes, that in the future we certainly won't be looking at revenue of $10 million per auditor. It'll certainly be something a lot less than that, and probably won't need as many auditors. But for the next couple of years, we think that we still for sure need to maintain the audit size that we have.
Just one quick question here. Would that be a $40 million annual loss, or would that just be say, with one less audit team, that it would take 5 years for the remaining teams to do the audit instead of four.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, you could kind of look at that as that scenario if you look at what I just said about how taxpayers are now paying. So, you know, you can look at those numbers in a few different ways, and maybe it's just something that might take us a lot longer to collect, or maybe it's a fact that I know, you know, there's a supplemental appropriation for the Department of Law for $15.5 million to help fund some litigation. One thing we might say about our budget, we don't come back in normally for supplemental appropriations. The budget you see is the money that we expend. We don't have a legal staff or anything like that, and so we use the Department of Law for that function. But we'd like to get some of these issues resolved before they do result in litigation, and that's why we believe this to be an important function. In treasury management, we could do what a lot of people do, a lot of firms do, a lot of pension funds and a lot of private businesses and even governmental units, and pay for some of our costs with compensating balances. And the custodial function is certainly one that we could do. In other words, we would place a non-interest-bearing security on deposit with State Street Bank, and they would gain the interest on that, but on the other hand, they wouldn't charge us for the custodial function. It would reduce our revenues that we would earn, but it would also certainly reduce the indicated cost for that function. It's not a net savings, but it is one way of reducing the general fund component. The other area, and the only other area that we see in Treasury that we could even begin to look at, would be the debt management capability. That would involve the one position that we have. We've asked for $20,000 for bond counsel, and there's also like $25,000 in there for Government Finance Associates, which is our financial advisor. In the past years, we've done a lot of work in that area. We've put out Alaska Public Debt, which I believe is a very valuable publication. It's certainly not one that we're required to do or need to do. We've had significant discussions and had Moody's and Standard & Poor's up here try to get a rating upgrade. Will it do something for the state? Probably not, because we're not issuing debt. If we issue debt in the future, it may help us. But if we do issue debt, maybe our credit won't be quite as good. But it certainly helps the municipalities and the other local governments, because their rating cannot be any higher than ours. In fact, you're always one step lower. So whatever we can do in that area to help the local governments, we think it's well advised. And plus, we do other work for the international airport systems. We did that forward swap for them so that they could lock into today's credit in light of declining revenues, especially with the duty-free shop and what have you. So when that bond becomes callable in 3 years, or refinanceable, I should say, in 3 years, that they can do it and take advantage of today's rates and today's credit. So those are some of the things we do with that debt management capability. We believe it to be an important function, but it's certainly one that we probably at this point in time would not have to do.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Larson.
Yeah, that last statement is probably true. It's probably something at this time that we don't have to do unless we consider bonding again this year, as we have considered. So,
well,
I guess when we look at it with our subcommittee, it will be with the idea of whether we're serious about bonding some functions or not, and have to make our decision from that.
This is the position that tracks all the bonding statewide,
right?
Including the municipal revenue bonds. And
Mr. Chairman, I might add that I didn't have the opportunity to attend the session that we had here a few weeks back, where we had the financial advisor and bond counsel and what have you before you. And I believe one of the underwriting firms said something about, well, maybe we're just not putting out enough information to the financial community about the state of Alaska's credit. Well, we are putting out a lot of financial information on the state's credit. We do have the old thing with Alaska Public Debt. We've gone through the scenarios with Standard & Poor's and Moody's and all that, and we do give out information to underwriting firms, and they get it through their dealings with ADA or Alaska Housing Finance, wherever it might be. We do a lot of work in that. We think it's important that the state maintain a debt management type relationship. Not only to help the state, perhaps we don't really need the help now, but it certainly helps local communities, and we believe it also helps the state agencies. But it's something that we probably don't have to do. And that comes down to our end of the non-formula funded programs. And while we weren't asked to get into the formula funded programs, we did indicate some of the shared taxes that we thought it might be good to look at. We did not put down here the fish tax. But we do have the amusement and gaming tax, which is really the coin-operated machine tax, and we do share out those revenues. And the liquor license fees, we do share liquor license fees to local governments for, I guess, for really for their enforcement efforts. But we're doing a lot of the enforcement, and that kind of has to be combined and looked at with respect to that top item there, the $347,000. And then there's the aviation fuel, which is for locally owned or leased and operated type airports, probably such as the Juneau Airport here, Merrill Field, and others that aren't state owned.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask about the function of the oil and gas tax case review unit, which you didn't propose any changes to, but given the recent memorandum that you've signed with the Department of Law, could we reduce or eliminate this oil and gas case review unit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, the oil and gas tax case review unit, well, in the book, it shows that it's all for contractual services, basically, and there is some travel, and there also the, it's really to support the hearing officer section within the commissioner's office, and that's what most of the money in there supports. There's some travel in there, and that's for hearing officers who may have to travel to wherever they need to go for the hearing, quite frequently to Anchorage, and then it's for the time that the hearing officers spend in, either in the form of hearing process. Now, there is some money in there for other contractual purposes. We don't spend it all on the hearing officer salaries. There's out of that amount of money, there's about, what, I think $100,000, maybe $120,000 that can be spent for the contractual purposes. But we do some of that in the past, and we do need some capability of hiring some, you might say, expert counsel. If you're, I'm not talking about legal counsel, but other expertise that we don't have on staff. And it's really an adjunct to the oil and gas audit and income and excise audit functions. And maybe some of that, instead of being shown as oil and gas tax case review, could be incorporated into those other budget units. And it probably wouldn't be quite as visible. But I mean, that's basically what. Then that is what it supports.
How has the memorandum with law affected your operations?
Well, I think that the memorandum of understanding is relatively new, but I think it's right now we're working very cooperatively with the Department of Law, and I think it can only result in the best for the state in the way of increased settlements and better efficiency, shall we say, in focusing our attentions on the taxpayer instead of focusing our attentions on each other. We're now working together to focus our attention on the taxpayer to help bring together the settlement process or the final resolution, whether it's through settlement, compromise, or through formal hearing, or and on into litigation. And that was the whole idea of the memorandum of understanding. It certainly, that has nothing to do with this oil and gas tax case review, Representative. That's to help the Department of Revenue proceed with its functions of assessing taxes and collecting taxes. And hearing tax appeals. We still are performing those functions.
Independently?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, when you say independently, the state of Alaska does not have, and the Department of Revenue does not have the capability for hiring attorneys. We have no attorneys within the Department of Revenue. We have no attorneys in the Department of Revenue. We do have a few, but they're not practicing attorneys. They're auditors. And whenever we need legal assistance, we look to the Department of Law. So when you say independently, no, not independently, because we do need to incorporate the Department of Law into our process. When we identify significant issues that may be legal issues and have significance, that's when we're bringing the Department of Law in. And for sure, when we get past the assessment process and into the review process, that's where it becomes very important that the Department of Law is an integral part of the process, in order to help build the case, in order for us to help understand the legal issues better. And in that way, we can make better judgments with respect to settlements and have a better record with respect to the hearing process that may have to go up if, on appeal. And so we want something that's supportable in that case.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a general question on procedures here. I noticed Under the formula funded programs, all three of those would take a statutory change, as well as under the fish tax audit expenses above. I guess my question is in regards to the subcommittees. Would you like the subcommittees to prepare legislation, or will we discuss that at a later time? How would you like to handle that?
The legislation part?
Yeah, for any statute changes that are required.
Yeah, all we want to do is identify them so that we can build them into a package that see if we can get enough support for.
Okay.
Or discuss them to see if there's support for them.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Boyer?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask if there was a particular reason why there weren't any reductions shown in the Commissioner's office or admin services.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, we've gone through some extensive reviews of those areas, and in the Commissioner's office, you know, we don't have any assistant commissioners left. We do have a special assistant. There's myself, a special assistant, and a secretary, and then there's some of the hearing officers' salaries in there, and that's the Commissioner's office. I mean, it's not a big Commissioner's office, if you will, and the administrative services. Of course, you know, if we were to reduce 46 positions, you know, maybe there's something certainly that the Administrative Services Division wouldn't have to do. Does that mean we can eliminate one position out of there? You know, that's something we'd certainly look at. But when we, like I say, when we submitted our FY93 budget, we certainly looked very close at it to make sure that we were only requesting positions that were needed and well supported. And perhaps, you know, if something like this was accepted and we were down 46 positions, you know, we may not need, maybe we can get by with one person less. I just don't know. But that might be a possibility.
Representative Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions, Commissioner. In regard to the governor's FY93 budget that was submitted here a while back.
Yes.
Revenue. And I asked all the commissioners the same question. In there is 12 new positions for the Department of Revenue. What I was wondering is you indicated in your summary that it's possible that 46 positions could be terminated under this scenario. What about these 12 positions? Would those then go away? Are those no longer being considered? Or would these be added to the budget and then lose these others?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mackey, when we put the 93 budget together, we put together the budget that we believed that was a bare-bones necessity budget in order to carry out the functions in the best interest of the state, in order to collect taxes, manage money, and these positions here are positions that we think we need, the new positions. And so we were starting with the FY93 governor's budget, and we back off from that. I'm not sure if there were 12 positions. I know there were nine.
Nine full-time and three part-time.
I might add, in the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, one I think was in Permanent Fund Dividend Division, or two of them were. And it's a kind of a switch in there. And Permanent Fund Dividend Division, of course, it's not general funds, but they use a lot of permanent full-times and part-times and temporaries and all that. And even though it shows an increase in personnel and Permanent Fund Dividend Division, there's an actual staff month reduction of about 11.5, as I recall. And at least six of the positions, the new positions, are in the various boards, commissions, and authorities. One was in the ABC, which was a switch from part-time to full-time. Two were in the Permanent Fund Corporation, and three of them were in science and tech. So when it comes to the non-boards, commissions, and authorities, we had three new positions. And two of them were in the Permanent Fund Dividend Division.
Okay. My concern was I see like some of them are technology administrators for salaries of $80,000 apiece. I have no clue what a technology administrator is, but I just noticed that there are several different positions here that are going to be added to your budget at a time that we're trying to hold the line. And as you said, that you're not filling vacancies and things like that, I was just curious as to where these positions would fall into this new scheme since you've been asked to find $2.5 million worth of reductions. If you had considered maybe not creating these new positions, or just for my information. My next question would be, what is your vacancy factor in, and it, is it true that you're not filling any vacancies anymore as a matter of policy?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mackey, as far as the science and technology, that's not general fund money. It comes out of the money that they have, their own earnings. So we could reduce all their positions, and it wouldn't affect their general fund component $1, because it's all separate money.
I wasn't asking about science and tech.
Well, I think you mentioned the science or grant technology or something like that.
No, position. There is a technology administrator.
Right, those are in science and tech.
Oh, okay.
And so those are not, we only have a couple of new positions, and basically they're in treasury functions.
Okay. I didn't point out the other positions. I just was kind of curious about those because they had a pretty kind of a high salary range.
Right.
There.
And they're not general fund monies.
Okay.
They're in fact in a separate fund and a separate agency that has, you know, its own board and everything that.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to get specific. I guess as a matter of policy, are we creating new positions on one hand and then taking positions away on the other, I guess is where I was trying to get to. One final question, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Along with, you know, looking at potential reductions that we have to do, I think many of us are concerned about possible revenue enhancers and maybe doing away with some of the things that we don't really need to be doing. AHFC, what are the assets and what kind of revenues do you think we could generate by the sale of that entity if we no longer wanted to be in that business? Have you looked at that as a possibility?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mackey, as far as AHFC, you know, here again, that's a separate corporation of the state of Alaska. It's in the Department of Revenue just because it had to be someplace. We don't manage it. It has a separate board of directors and its own separate budget and its own separate funds. But I believe it has sizable assets. It has a fairly large fund balance. The Alaska Housing Finance believes that money is needed to carry out its programs. The revenue for that is going to be probably over $100 million this year. They do have a dividend formula for paying part of that back to the state of Alaska. It's possible that, you know, it could pay out 100% of its earnings this year for FY92 and not deposit maybe any undue harm in its ability to meet its obligations and what have you. And that could be $100 million. But as far as positions, you asked one question a while ago about vacancies and filling positions, creating some new positions and eliminating things. And I think that's kind of a matter of how any organization might work is when you have different things that need to be done and other things that may not need to be done. It's not something that's static, and maybe there's new things and other things that are deleted. But, yes, no, we don't have a policy of not filling our new positions, our vacant positions, because we have positions that are very important to us. We have positions that are one of a kind.